Welcome back to Radio Boston. I am Tiziana Deering, and it's Friday, so let's do us some Week in Review. We've got a little bit of a condensed time frame today and a lot to get to, so we're going to dive right in. We start with the latest on the coronavirus. Governor Baker said at a press conference yesterday that he's working with the Massachusetts Department of Public Health and the CDC to develop a plan to help Massachusetts prepare for a possible outbreak.
I would expect that the beginning of next week, we'll probably have a fully formulated plan that we can show people.
33 people have been quarantined in Boston, but Marty Martinez, the city's chief of health and human services, stressed to reporters the overall risk is still low.
There's still only been one confirmed case of the coronavirus in the city of Boston, and right now the general risk to Bostonians is very low.
Also at that presser, Boston EMF chief James Hooley said first responders do have precautions ready should we see an outbreak here.
If we get within 6 feet of somebody who's coughing, has fever, something like this, we don a one type of mask for us that's fitted.
So how about the federal level? The president's been quick to assure the country that his administration is ready to handle the situation. Here's White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney at CPAC this morning.
Is it real? It absolutely is real. There is no question about it. But you saw the president the other day. The flu is real.
So are we doing enough to prepare? And are we thinking and talking about the coronavirus in the right way? For more, we are going to turn to our Week in Review panel here in Studio 3. First, we have Jennifer Nasur. She's the former chair of the Massachusetts Republican Party and CEO of Reflect Us. Jennifer, welcome back.
Nice to be here.
And also here is Seti Warren, former mayor of Newton and currently the executive director of the Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy at the Harvard Kennedy School. Welcome back, Seti.
Great to be with you.
And of course, you're with us too, and we want you to call. Join the conversation. Where are we on the coronavirus in terms of your level of comfort that we know what's coming, that we're prepared, and that your elected representatives at the state or the federal level have this in hand? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. All right, so Seti, I'll go to you. Are you satisfied with how we've handled preparations locally to this point?
Certainly. It sounds like Governor Baker is moving ahead with putting a plan in place for the state. Certainly Mayor Walsh is as well. So I think that our local elected leaders are doing the right thing. When I heard this, I immediately thought about the Ebola virus in 2014 when I was mayor. And, you know, one of the things I depended on was what the president was saying, President Obama, what the Secretary of Health and Human Services was saying, what the CDC was saying. And I took a lot of guidance from their measures and what they're doing to implement precautionary pieces in Newton, and because we were expecting someone with Ebola to actually come to Newton for about 48 hours. My concern is at the federal level, we are not seeing proper communication, direction, information being put out by the White House. Certainly between Mulvaney, Pence, and the CDC representative all saying different things, and the president, which is of great concern.
So before I turn to you, Jennifer, I'm going to set this up. This is Mulvaney, who you just talked about at CPAC this morning, talking a little bit more. And this is in the context of the market.
It's not a death sentence. It's not the same as the Ebola crisis. Right. Now, it's much easier to get than Ebola. That's the one thing that concerns us about it, is how easy it is transferred. You could see that with what happened on the cruise ship in Japan. But this is something we deal with. This is something we know how to deal with. That's why we sit there and watch the markets and there's this huge panic. I'm like, why isn't there this panic every single year over flu?
So that was in addressing, you know, the fall of the markets this week. Is that a compelling argument? And at the federal level, are you feeling comfortable that the eyes are on the right balls and we've got the things in place that we need?
I mean, if we're talking about the CDC, I do. I mean, I think that this is one of those things that, you know, the president is infamous for going off script or for not maybe seeing all of the talking points he's given. So I think he said that the flu kills 69,000 up to 69,000 people a year. And we've seen 16,000 cases so far. Or impact 69,000. And so, you know, I think what we have learned is maybe to take what the president says not as seriously and maybe leave it up to the health officials.
I'm sorry. I thought you were done. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Jennifer.
On the state and city level, I think the mayor and the governor have been doing a great job. I have full faith in them. I think the Secretary of Health and Human Services is amazing. And I have no doubt that they are putting as much in place as quickly as they possibly can.
Seti, you looked like you wanted to add
well,
to that.
One of the concerns I have, I mean, we're really fortunate here in Massachusetts to have elected leaders that are taking these steps. And we have experts in the field right here in Massachusetts. My concern is around communities that don't have access to the experts in health and otherwise. In Newton, for example, my CAO was an infectious disease MD. I mean, you go out further away from these hubs with all these resources. You go to communities across the country that don't have these, you wonder then what measures are they taking or not? And could they be acting on just misinformation and then disinformation being put out that may not be effective at all?
I find that really compelling. And I'm not sure it's just less resourced areas. This was very striking to me this morning. This is Dr. Dennis Carroll, who's an infectious disease expert on Morning Edition this morning.
We also have the situation where we don't have adequate supplies of diagnostics. The state of California is following 8,000 people, but they only have 200 kits to be able to diagnose whether or not they're infected or not.
Now, as I say that, I also want to say that as we were producing this segment, and we've done three coronavirus segments this week, we've wanted to be really thoughtful and careful not to dial up a panic button that doesn't need to be dialed up, or to offer recriminations that are not in order to recriminate on. So, you know, how do you strike the balance when what you're talking about, SETI, what we just heard there, but also the fact that, for example, in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, we've had one case who is now out of quarantine. And the Commonwealth just announced today that we have the kits to do the testing here with a 24-hour turnaround versus the week it takes when you send it through the CDC, Jennifer. What's the balance?
Yeah, I mean, well, again, I think that this is something that the federal government really needs to step up on. We are, like SETI said, we're very fortunate. I think one of the biggest problems that we continue to see, though, what's happening nationally is that we get so bogged down in politicizing issues that shouldn't be politicized. So coronavirus is something that should be taken seriously. It is not a political issue. It is an issue that it really needs all hands on deck to make sure that it does not get out of hand, that communities that do not have the same resources that we do in the Commonwealth, where we are surrounded by wonderful researchers and wonderful hospitals and great leaders, in other areas, what do they do? And so, you know, I think that we need to take a step back. We need to look at the facts, and we need to make sure that all places around the country that need help get the help, and it stops being a political issue.
So, SETI, before we move on to Columbia Gas, I just want to ask, actually, you know what? We got a call, and I love our callers. So I'm actually, sorry, I was going to ask you a question. I'm not. I'm going to go to our caller
no
instead.
Problem.
We've got Dave and, Dave and Rosalind Dale. You get to be the last word on coronavirus, so go ahead.
Oh. Lucky me.
Yeah.
So you guys never answered the question that the guy before talked about, the flu and this particular disease. I understand that the flu has a lower death rate, but it seems as though we get this flu every year and thousands of people in our country die and people don't go crazy over it. I'm really concerned that the news media, especially, I'm sorry to say this, has whipped this up. Is it an important story? Yes. Is it a crisis story? Not in our country, other places perhaps, but certainly not here. Of course, if the Chinese had just told the truth originally, we wouldn't have been in this mess. So
Dave, I am going to take you as a third panelist, and that was the answer to my last question, which was how much should we be dialing up this or not? I, you know, Dave made some strong points there. I actually do think that's kind of the cap on that piece of the conversation. So I am going to move us to Columbia Gas for just a minute. On Wednesday, they reached a plea deal with federal prosecutors regarding the Merrimack Valley gas explosion in 2018. It includes a $53 million fine, which is the largest ever under the Federal Pipeline Safety Act. They were forced to leave the state of Massachusetts. Eversource has agreed to purchase the company's Massachusetts assets for $1.1 billion. And I want to just grab one piece of sound here. This is Lawrence Mayor Dan Rivera on Wednesday, who says he's not happy to have gone through this, but feels that justice is beginning to be served.
I get no joy today in hearing this. I get no, excitement about this. Only in that when we talk about justice, these are the type of things that should happen.
And callers, are you listeners? Are you satisfied with this outcome with Columbia Gas? Have we gone far enough? What else needs to happen? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We don't have a ton of time on this, so I want to get right to the meat of the main question, which is: have there been enough consequences? SETI, I'll start with you. Have there been enough consequences for Columbia Gas, and has there been sufficient outcome given what happened?
On the consequences, I certainly. you know, towards the end of the, has all been unwound. We're finding out there was a whistleblower involved.
Inside the company.
Inside the company. I mean, I would like to see. I'd like to see that play out a little bit more. That's one. Two, I think with the sale, the proceeds should go, or a good portion of it should go to the community. I really, and I know that elected representatives are saying that now. But
yeah,
I think
Columbia Gas is not allowed to profit from the sale.
Right, right. But I'd like to see the proceeds go to the community.
All right. So, and let me ask you this, Jennifer. I've seen some analysis and heard some discussion around this saying, it always seems that companies are a polyglot. They're this big company, so they make the mistake and there's a financial repercussion, but there aren't individuals held accountable in the same way. Should there be in this case, for example, should there be firings or anything like that
No.
in this case, or are you satisfied?
No, I think that there definitely should be firings. I mean, listen, I don't think you have a company like this and you don't know. You run a risk. You say this is a calculated risk that we're going to take. Unfortunately, the consequence here is far greater than Columbia Gas losing their power in Massachusetts. It's that people's lives were taken. People's homes were demolished. People were living without heat for months. I mean, I think that the consequences go so far into it, and we can never forget that lives were lost. And so, you know, I think that at the end of the day, they really need to take a look. And you look at the CEO and you look at, you know, who it's past the project manager, and no one can really say that they're escaping culpability.
I do want to note, I think more than 20 people were injured, one life. And that is very, very serious. I just want to, you know, sort of note the number. Lawrence Mayor Dan Rivera, I want to get one more quote from him on this. He says he doesn't feel the ordeal is over. This is him again at that press conference on Wednesday.
I don't say that it's an easy thing to reach. The sense of feeling whole is not something that's touchable, definable. But like a lot of things in law, you know it when you feel it, you know you see it.
So, you know, this makes me think once again of the various kinds of conversations we have about collective trauma, about community trauma.
Mm-hmm.
How does a community heal from the kind of damage and trauma of 2018 and, you know, with the Columbia Gas explosion, Seti?
You know, when I was listening to Dan, who's a friend of mine, I think about various traumas that we went through in Newton. This takes time. I mean, we lost students to suicide. We had a major accident in West Newton that killed many different people. This is going to take some time to understand and heal. I think that the mayor is correct in saying that this ordeal is not over. And I think Jennifer is correct in saying we need to look at the CEO. We need to look at the people that clearly knew there were risks they were taking. And we lost a life here in Lawrence and endless millions of dollars of damage and people being traumatized. So I think the mayor's doing a great job up there in voicing the pain of his community. I certainly have had to do that, and he's moving the community along, but there's got to be some repercussions with Columbia.
All right. We are going to get to hubups, but before we do, I want to ask just a couple of questions about the 2020 race. South Carolina's tomorrow, Super Tuesday, 14 states voting next Tuesday, March 3rd. A new one of our polls is out today that shows that Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is ahead of Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts by 8 points, 25% to 17%. Jennifer, what do you make of those numbers, and what are you going to be watching for this weekend and next Tuesday, given those numbers?
Well, I mean, I'm not a Bernie Sanders fan, but Bernie Sanders has been working his people since 2016. He has not stopped. So there has been voter contact. And both what Seti and I, what we both know is that what wins a race ultimately is that voter contact. And so he is the reason you see his poll numbers. I mean, I think that if he really ends up being ahead of Warren, that's the end game for her. She's done. There's no room in that race for two super progressives.
Okay, so given that, in just a few seconds, Seti, what should Elizabeth Warren be doing between today and Tuesday?
Look, she has one of the best campaign operations out there. She's got people on the ground in multiple states. She's got to make the case. Jennifer's point, Bernie Sanders has been running for 6 years. I also want to say one other thing. One out of three people in this country run out of money between paychecks. and this includes people making $100,000 a year. There's a reason why Bernie Sanders is doing so well. He's resonating. And there's an all-time distrust in government. There's an all-time distrust in the media. Bernie Sanders has capitalized on that outsider sort of brand. So I think that's why he's doing well. And I think Elizabeth Warren needs to stick to what she's been doing, and we'll see what happens. But he has a 6-year head start.
All right. Well, I hadn't thought of it that way before, but good point, you two. All right, Jennifer, time for our hubbubs. These are those brief stories or events that caught your attention this week. What you got?
So I love coffee. And
me too.
I thought Panera's subscription, coffee subscription program for tea, unlimited tea and coffee for $8.99 a month, not to be their advertising, but I thought that that was really a cool market for them to just pop in, get your coffee refilled and go.
So wait, you can like go in. It's not like it delivers to your house. You go into the store.
You go in. Any of their locations around the
country. And then you just like hand them your cup and they put coffee in it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my fantasy.
Pretty cool, right? Mine too. Cool.
That's really cool.
All right. That is a hubbub. How about you, Seti?
So the passing of Stephen Ross, Holocaust survivor, father of Michael Ross, the first Jewish president of the Boston City Council and good friend of mine, and Julie Ross, who worked with me at Newton City Hall. An incredible, incredible, remarkable man who I loved personally, who after he became a Holocaust survivor, worked tirelessly to remind people that we all have to treat each other as human beings and we should never let something like that happen again. So he lived a fruitful, incredible life, but people should look him up and note his work, particularly in times like we have today.
I appreciate you reminding us of that. And listeners, yesterday on Radio Boston, we did a segment on him and on a documentary that was produced about him in 2017. I know it's our show, but I'm going to say it was pretty compelling and that you should check it out. It is on our website at radioboston.org, and that would be a lovely way to remember him. Yeah, I appreciate you noting him to us, Seti. Mine is more lighthearted. I am going to shift gears on us now. Many have noticed that I really like hubbubs about animals, and today is about a goat. Okay, it's actually about the goat because it is time for Goat Watch 2020. If you follow football, like at all, you know that Tom Brady's contract with the New England Patriots is set to expire on 17 March. Not that I know that, but that's what it is. Now, Thursday morning, ESPN reporter Jeff Darlington quoted unnamed sources close to Brady who are saying he told them he's leaving. That's it. I'm out. All speculation, of course, but I do want to say that if you are a diehard Brady fan, you should put your therapist on speed dial. Buckle down, and to paraphrase the book Where the Wild Things Are, it is time to let the wild rumpus start. Because over the next few days, we could find out that the goat is relocating to another farm. So that is my hubbub.
Stay, Tom, stay. Stay, Tom,
and Giselle,
stay.
And Giselle did her Instagram post that I thought was interesting, too.
Which was?
It was basically saying, I don't know where we're going to be.
Yeah.
He's staying.
I'm thinking she does.
He's
all right. Staying. That is Jennifer Nasur, former chair of the Massachusetts Republican Party and CEO of Reflect Us. Thank you for today.
Thank you.
Also, Seti Warren, former mayor of Newton and now the executive director of the Shorenstein Center at the Harvard Kennedy School. Thanks to you, too.
Thank you so much.